So I'd now like to introduce our two presenters, our two academic presenters who will talk about their paper. I'm very pleased that they could join us. We have Christian Stadler and Christopher Napier, both from Royal Holloway, University of London. So I will hand over to them. Gentlemen, you have 30 minutes. I'll give you a call 5 minutes before. Thank you very much for participating, and we look forward to the comments that you have for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anne. I'm going to begin the presentation, and then I'm going to hand over to Christian, who's going to talk to our empirical findings, and then I'll come back at the end and talk about possible future directions for research, but just briefly, because I know we're going to be coming back to that later on in the panel discussion. So I'm just going to share my screen now, and hopefully the presentation will become visible. I'll just go back to the start of the presentation and then show it. So can you now see the slides? Thank you, good. Right, well, last year at the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales Information for Better Markets conference, Christian and I were asked to look into the real effects of the new revenue accounting standard. Originally, we were asked to look at the real effects of about four different standards, but we found that it was enough just to look at one standard and therefore to focus on the introduction of IFRS 15. The paper itself was published recently in Accounting and Business Research, The Real Effects of a New Accounting Standard, the Case of IFRS 15 Revenue from Contracts with Customers. And in this presentation, I'm going to very briefly outline the framework we developed for looking at the effects and consequences of new and amended accounting regulations and standards. Christian then will talk about the empirical findings from our study of IFRS 15, Revenue from Contracts with Customers, and then very briefly talk about some future research directions. Now, the framework we developed, this is what we show in the paper, is trying to identify various different effects of a new or amended accounting standard or other regulation. So we first of all can see direct accounting effects. There may be changes in what items are recognized in financial statements. There may be changes in how items in financial statements are measured. There may be changes in where items are presented, which statements, whether items are just disclosed in notes to the accounts or actually feature on the face of the statement of financial position and the statement of profit and loss. And then there may be more detailed disclosure changes. So an item that's already disclosed in financial statements, a new standard may require detailed analysis, information about uncertainties and so on. So we see those as being direct immediate effects of a new standard. There are other effects on information. So for example, a new standard may change the way in which internal users of accounting information understand particular transactions. We thought that this could be particularly the case with IFRS 15, with its new five-step process for recognizing revenue and measuring revenue. There may be changes in how external users understand what a business is doing because more information is disclosed about how revenue is actually recognized. This may give a better insight into business models. And companies themselves may want to communicate the effects of a new standard to stakeholders, particularly investors. We then saw capital market effects. We didn't actually look at capital market effects. We wanted to bracket that off from our study. And then real effects where a new standard actually changes the way in which a business operates. There may be cash flow effects of a new standard, for example, implementation and application costs. A standard may lead a business to look at its contracts and perhaps possibly change the contracts so that they fit better with the underlying model of, say, revenue recognition. There may be effects on how organizations behave. There may be external effects because the different numbers that are generated by a new accounting standard may lead regulators to look at a business in different ways. And there may be other effects, tax and dividend effects, and would be a particular example of this. In our paper, we didn't look at capital market effects. We saw that as a completely different type of study. We looked briefly at information effects, but we did look at the accounting effects and particularly the real effects. So I'm now going to pass over to Christian, who's going to talk about the actual empirical findings.
Yes, thank you, Christopher. We used three different sources of data for our empirical analyses. So first we looked at annual reports. There we took the Stoxx Europe 50 at the end of 2018. So essentially we looked at the biggest European companies. Then we analyzed the small set of comment letters of those companies included in the Stoxx Europe 50 that also provided the comment letter on the exposure draft 2011/6. And then we did three interviews, one with a preparer, one with an advisor, and one with an auditor. The preparer had actually been with two different companies during the time of the implementation of IFRS 15. And the advisor and auditor, they were from two different Big Four audit companies. So even though we had only three interviews, we actually covered a quite broad range of views. So what we were trying to do is to provide empirical evidence on all of those different aspects from the framework which you have just heard about, except for capital market effects. And therefore, we covered quite a lot of different sources, but didn't analyze a very large number of observations for each of them. Next slide, please. So on this slide, you can see the logos of those firms we have included in our sample. Actually, there are not 50 logos shown, but only 48, because two firms, we had to exclude. One, ABB from Switzerland, uses US GAAP, so we didn't include it. And Unilever has been included twice because there is a Dutch and a UK part of it, so we only included one. So that just gives you a flavor of what are these big companies which we have analyzed. Next slide, please. So referring back to this framework we have developed, we first analyzed accounting effects. And first we analyzed jointly recognition and measurement changes by looking at how did reported numbers change. And we looked at three different changes in numbers. First, we looked at change in retained earnings, in particular, that is the change in the opening balance of retained earnings, and we express it as a percentage of shareholders' equity. We denote that delta RE, we ignore the sign for the majority of the analyses, so we are not interested in whether it was a decrease or an increase, but just whether there was a big or small change. Most of the numbers relate to the beginning of the 2018 accounting period, but for those firms which made the transition, a full retrospective transition, there it can also relate to earlier years. So some 2017 and even one 2016 year. Then secondly, we looked at change in reported revenue. And how we did that is all of the numbers, they always relate to the same year. So for example, if the change was made in 2018, then we would compare the revenue under IFRS 15, and we compare it to the revenue which would have been under IAS 11/18 as reported by firms, but again for the 2018 year, and then we present it as a percentage of the 2018 reported revenue under IFRS 15. We denote this delta R, and again, we take the absolute value. And as I said before, in the same way, if the transition was happening in an earlier year, then our numbers would relate all to that earlier year. And in the same way, as we analyze the change in reported revenue, we also look at the change in reported profit. Again, comparing for the same year the IFRS 15 amount with the amount under the old standards. And we express that again as reported revenue. We didn't express that as reported profit because that would lead to too much fluctuation just because for some firms profits would be low. And then this we denote as delta P. So these are the three numbers and how we have analyzed. And now please next slide, we can see what our findings are. So before I'm gonna tell you the details about the different percentages, I need to explain a little bit how companies disclose information, because that is very important to how we could collect numbers. So when we actually read the disclosures, we found that many firms provide quite little disclosure, and many say the effect of the standard has been immaterial. So in the first line here, in the descriptives, it's 48% of firms say explicitly by themselves that the effect has been not material. So some of those firms would then not provide any other information. Some firms will provide the detailed of the retained earnings, stop it there. So that's all what they do. And we can also find, even if a firm didn't say it's immaterial, some firms have very, very small numbers in terms of the change. So if we were adding on to those 48%, those firms which we think the number is actually insignificant or not material, so the real number of how many firms had immaterial effects would be much higher. And that becomes quite clear as I move along in this table. So first, a delta RE, so the retained earnings divided, the change in retained earnings divided by shareholders' equity, the mean is 1.88%, but the median is much lower, only 0.05%. And this is because there were a few firms which had bigger effects, and in particular, one firm stands out with a change in 57.31%. And that is Airbus, at that time called EADS. And if that firm is taken out, the mean reduces quite significantly to only 0.70%. And then if we want to give an estimate, how many firms are there where the effect was at least not material, we can look at when was this delta RE bigger than 1%, and we find that there were only 13% of the companies where this was the case. And a similar picture emerges when we look at the change in revenue divided by revenue and change in profit divided by revenue. We have only 13% of firms which had an effect on revenue, which is bigger than 1%, and then we had only 8% of firms which had an effect on profit, which was bigger than 1%. And that can be explained by the fact that some firms, for example, National Grid in the UK, they had both of their revenue and costs reduced by the same amount. And so that had actually no impact on profit whatsoever. So overall, our conclusion from this is that there were actually only a limited number of companies being significantly affected in terms of changes of accounting numbers. Come down to profit, even those which were affected, it wasn't really that much. Then the last three columns in the table, where before we have ignored the sign of the effects, we analyze here which firms had positive or negative changes, and there isn't really a very clear trend. So in all of the cases, for all of the three numbers, some firms have positive effects, some firms have negative effects. But in particular for revenue and profit, most of the firms had no effect or no significant effect. So overall, a new standard, but for most of the firms, not much change in reported numbers. Next slide, please. So then we looked at disclosure changes, and there we did find more changes. So we first looked at how many firms did provide a separate revenue note, and we found that 38% did in the year when they first applied the standard. And that was a substantial increase to the prior year, because in the prior year, we only had 25% of companies doing that. Now, the question is, why are these numbers still so low? Well, this is just a separate revenue note, but provide the IFRS 15 disclosures as part of the segment reporting note. And I will come back to that on the next slide. So when we look at the median, we find that in 2018, three quarters of a page was about IFRS 15 disclosures, and that is up half a page from the previous year, where it was only a quarter of a page. One company, Novartis from Switzerland, provided six pages of revenue disclosure, providing for 3 years all of their top 20 medicines, detailed revenue disclosures, and also geographical disclosures. So a lot of detailed information, much more than it had been in the year before. We had only one, so this change of increased disclosure was across the board. In our stats, there's only one company which had a reduced amount of disclosure, a quantity. We only looked at quantity of disclosure. And this was Reckitt Benckiser from the UK, but that had nothing to do with IFRS 15. This was because in the year before IFRS 15 was adopted, they had a change in operating segments. And because of that change, they provided some additional disclosure in that 1 year. And then they reverted back to normal in a way. So that had nothing to do with IFRS 15. So overall, we saw a significant increase in disclosure following the new standard. Next slide, please. I guess it's a bit slow. So all of this information was from our analysis of the annual reports of the firms. And as I said, we also analyzed comment letters and interviews. So I mentioned before that there is this this fact that many companies disclose IFRS 15 revenue disclosures in their segment reporting note. And that was an issue which was raised by BP when they provided their comment letter, because they wanted to know in more detail how the IFRS 15 disclosures interact with the segment information disclosures. And can we please go back to the previous slide? And we also, in terms of the interviewees, they had actually mixed views about the disclosure. The auditor, who was in general very positive about the standard, said most people would say that revenue disclosures were generally poor. The intention was that IFRS 15 would give users a lot more information. I think we're probably only about 60% of the way there in year one, and I think year two should show some further improvement. But the preparer, who was overall much more negative, said some of the additional disclosures are a waste of time. Next slide, please. So this was our evidence in terms of accounting. Now, in the rest of the presentation of our empirical findings, we want to give you a flavor of the other findings we had about information effects and real effects. So in terms of information effects, one thing Christopher introduced to you in the framework was this external users' understanding of information. And this here's a quote from EADS in their comment letter saying, that they think IFRS 15, the additional IFRS 15 disclosures are an accounting-only exercise that will divert our limited internal resources away from other financial reporting areas that we consider to be of more interest to users. So in a way, what they're saying is, these additional disclosures aren't really helping external users. Instead, they're actually harming external users, because they would have done other things which would be more useful to external users, but they can't do this because they have to basically do this compliance exercise about providing all of this information. So they were negative, and there were also many other firms who said the same thing. But of course, this is comment letter information, and there's obviously some kind of gaming going on here. And so the information about comment letters, one always needs to be like a little bit careful what to take away from that. So I now return back to Christopher for a summary of our real effect findings.
Thank you, Christian. My laptop is not being very cooperative at the moment. I don't know. There it is. That's better. All right. Now, one issue about the introduction of a new accounting standard is the costs that might be involved in implementing the standards. And one of the things we found was that certainly from the interview we had with the preparer and also with the advisor, that quite a few companies initially underestimated the impact that the new standard would have. Implementation usually involved both internal staff resources and external advisors, and there might be an initial assessment of the impact and then a detailed study of how the new standard would affect recognition and measurement of the business's revenue, and then practical implementation, which in some cases might require simply updating the existing accounting information systems, but in other cases might involve developing new systems to provide the information required by the new standard. As Christian's already said, we might take comments in comment letters with a pinch of salt, but certainly Deutsche Telekom claimed that the cost of implementing IFRS would be at least hundreds of millions of euros. I don't think we found anything in the company's actual financial statements after implementation to either support or challenge that number, but certainly for some companies with complex business models, there would certainly have been significant implementation costs. Again, this just gives you a flavor of some of the things we found. One of the thoughts we had was that companies would take the introduction of IFRS 15 as an opportunity to review their contractual arrangements. If they had standard contracts that might be difficult to interpret in terms of IFRS 15, for example, identifying performance obligations or identifying when obligations actually had been satisfied, then companies might revise their contracts to clarify issues. But what we were told by our interviews was that if a contract made commercial sense to the organization already, they would not be likely to change the contracts simply to make it easier to apply IFRS 15. It might be a consideration going forward in developing new contracts, but existing contracts that seem to make sense would simply continue. But our respondents did suggest that there would be behavioral effects, because identification of performance obligations means that various things that in the past were regarded as giveaways by the marketing department would now be performance obligations that would have to be taken into account in the allocation and recognition of revenue. And so the interviewees thought that the introduction of IFRS 15 would inevitably lead to closer oversight of marketing departments and their incentives by the accounting function. In terms of future research, well, one thing that we did was look at previous research, and it suggests that revenue as such is a relatively under-researched area in accounting. We looked on the database Scopus for papers in accounting journals, that is, journals that have the word accounting in their title. That represents over 90% of all journals in the discipline. I think the only significant journal that this search leaves out is Abacus. But what we found was that compared to papers that have the word earnings in their title or keywords or abstract, revenue represents somewhere between 5 and 10% of the numbers of papers that have the word earnings in the title. And certainly that suggests that either in the past researchers have found revenue relatively unproblematic and uninteresting, or that there is plenty of scope for future research. In terms of some of the areas we think would be ripe for academic research in the future, first of all, the accounting effects. We only looked at 1 year and we only looked at a very small sample, 48 firms. And so expansions are, in terms of the time periods covered and the number of companies covered would certainly be worthwhile. We didn't look at capital market effects. And so that is something that could be important. Our research suggests that IFRS 15 had much more significant influence in a smaller number of industries, particularly telecommunications and particularly industries involving a substantial amount of long-term contracts. And focusing on those industries could well provide more detailed insights than just doing generic surveys where, as our own evidence suggests, IFRS 15 had relatively little impact on the substantial number of companies. In terms of disclosure, well, we measured disclosure very crudely by counting the number of pages, but certainly more detailed disclosure studies would be worthwhile. And there already have been one or two of these published. Disclosure quality, well, that obviously depends on how we define disclosure quality, but certainly assessments of disclosure that look at the relationship between the way in which revenue is disclosed in financial statements and other measures would be certainly worthwhile. We carried out only a few interviews because of time constraints. We would have liked to interview some users, particularly financial analysts, and we can see that this is likely to be a very important area. So much existing research focuses on preparers and ways in which analysts have changed the way they regard companies because of the changes in revenue accounting and disclosure would be certainly a very valid field for future research. And as we said on several occasions, we just didn't look at capital market effects. And we can see that examining how the new revenue disclosures have changed the ways in which analyst forecasts are developed, if there are any changes, would be of interest. And also more generic research about the value relevance of the new revenue disclosures. Are there clearer relationships between security prices and information disclosed in financial statements, for example? So we certainly see that there are a lot of opportunities for future research, and we'll talk about some of those, I think, later on in the panel session. But otherwise, I think that's all that we want to say. We haven't quite filled the full 30 minutes, but that, I think, gives us more time for discussion later. So thank you very much.